Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. And we're at facebook.com/radiocafemc and on Twitter at radiocafemc. Later in the program, we will be speaking of the arts with Diana Delling. Right now, I'm delighted to welcome to the Radio Cafe John Gillis. He's Senior Manuscript Conservator at Trinity College Dublin, and Tom Leach, who's Director of the Press at the Palace of the Governors. And there will be a conversation tonight, a lecture tonight, about a very amazing object called the Fadden-Moore Psalter. And this, John, is an object. It's actually a book, a manuscript that was found in a bog, and it is from the 8th century in Ireland.
That's correct, Mary Charlotte, yes. It was discovered by a guy who was working the bogs. They worked the bogs in Ireland to harvest the peat. The peat's used either for burning or some of it is actually used for fertilizer. And this guy was digging the bog, as he did every day, and spotted something odd sticking out of the very large backhoe from his JCB. And out fell this object, which he examined, and there lay this book.
And he must have been pretty observant to notice that what looks like a big brown mess was actually a potentially valuable book.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of his comments were at the early stage that he saw something brown, which amazed me, considering everything in the area is brown.
Right.
They're very much engaged with the kind of local area and very aware of the fact that bogs particularly are rich in kind of archaeological finds. So they're kind of constantly tuned in, if you like.
So what is a bog, and what is it about bogs that allows people, manuscripts, and Lord knows what else to be preserved
yes.
for millennia?
Yes, indeed, as well as our bodies that pop up every now and
then. Yeah,
there's
that bog man.
That's right, we have quite a few of them. It's a unique environment, if you like, and there are components in it. It's laid down over many thousands of years, and the particular sort of bog, either these bogs which are empty lakes that have filled up, or there are those that have laid down on the surface, and so you get different components in them depending on the type. But overall, generally, there are components in it that help preserve organic material. Of course, organic material suffers generally in sort of hostile environments, but in a bog you get this sort of preservation, if you like, particularly of skin. And of course, the skin of a manuscript and the skin of a person is basically the same material.
Is it low oxygen environment?
Practically anaerobic, yes, which helps a great deal. But there are also this sphagnum moss. This is a component inside the bog, and it actively helps preserve the cell structure, if you like.
Just as an aside, do people study bogs to figure out how to preserve things that they want to be preserved?
We tried a few experiments. When I was in the National Museum working on the manuscript, we buried a pig because they're closest to us when it comes to skin type. A dead one, I might add. And we put some vellum and leather in as well, just to kind of see. But of course, it's very difficult to repeat. It's the timeline. It's in there for millennia, often, this material. So,
right.
You know.
You can't do it in a
year.
Well,
we'd be a while waiting for the results. Let's put it that way, yeah.
So let's talk about this object. This is an 8th century Irish manuscript.
Correct.
How did you identify what it was? Are there other extant ones that are similar to it?
Yes. The Psalter, which is basically the 150 Psalms of the Old Testament, played a very important role in Irish Christianity. It had a didactic role if a young oblates, a young novice, came into the monastery to train to be a monk. Of course, initially they would have been illiterate. So they were actually taught to read and write from the Psalms. And they would also have to commit to memory the complete 150 Psalms. So it was a very essential text within Irish monasticism and the Irish church in general in that early medieval period.
And so again, we know other books that are similar to it.
Yes.
That have been preserved in museums or
monasteries. Yes, we do. We do have psalters. In fact, one of Ireland's earliest books, the Cathach, which is probably from around the 6th century, about 700, or 600, it's a psalter. And it's preserved. It's not intact, but it's in better condition than the Fáil Mór Psalter. And it gives us a comparative. It gives us a parallel to compare against. There are a number of psalters across Europe, in fact, to compare against. And this is another role that the Fáil Mór Psalter plays. It now sits in as an individual psalter and can be compared against other psalters. And we look for little variants, little differences between them. And this helps us follow the exemplar. Of course, when this book was written in the first place, it was copied from another psalter. So you have this lineage, if you like, and it's to try and follow that lineage to see which family it comes from.
And they were all, of course, written by hand.
All written by hand. All on the skin, the vellum, on calfskin vellum, yes.
Now, this is a book that, I mean, among other things, makes you just, I would imagine, and if I were in your shoes, contemplate who held this object in their hands that you're holding in yours.
I have to be careful here because my sanity was questioned a couple of times. I slowly connected with the guy who wrote this over the 4.5 years. It was very intense in those early stages, and I was basically isolated with the book as I worked through it. And you've got to connect with it on more than just a mechanical level of fixing what was in front of me, but you begin to understand. You could almost see when he was having a bad day, where the script isn't quite as neat and as tidy as it was in another page, or he's run across a line. So you start to get a sense of the individual, and presumably the worth of this to him, not simply as a text he has to learn from, but has his own, probably his own personal possession.
Did the young monks do their own calligraphy?
Yes, they would have been taught to write. I mean, you would probably be chosen if you had a particular gift for writing, as you would do today, I guess. If there's you're particularly bent in one direction, then the abbot may spot that and train you up, have you trained up as a scribe or an illuminator, if perhaps, decoration in the manuscript was your forte, then you might be pointed in that direction.
Now, you've been working on this thing, as you said, for over 4 years.
Up to 6 now. I mean, but 4 years for the initial conservation, yes.
And what in the initial conservation? I mean, you get a man with a backhoe gives you a brown thing. It eventually makes it to you. What's your first step? What's your second step?
The first step was a very long one, and it involved very little movement. Because I stared at it for a month. I've been working with skin manuscripts for a quarter of a century, and somebody will come up to you with a project that you have to work with, and you make sense of it, because the first thing you do is your eyes tell you I'm looking at a book. With this, when this cover was first lifted off and it was revealed to me for the first time, I didn't even recognize it as a book. It just looked, as I say, it had this nickname in the museum as the lasagna. So that gives you some idea of
what
as a as
oh,
a
the lasagna.
Lasagna, yeah. So that's what we were kind of dealing with. This completely disrupted, destructed mass of material mixed up with bog material and everything, this wonderful shade of brown. So the first month was spent staring at it, literally just staring at it, trying to figure out where do you start. I was waiting for some divine inspiration, which didn't arrive, so eventually I was just told, get on with it, you know. And so you did, and you worked layer by layer. You literally, again, as I say in lectures, the manuscript dictated what you got at any given day. You would go in and start to tease away at a piece, try identify it as much as you possibly could before you removed it, because conservation by its nature is a destructive aspect to the work, because once you move it, the evidence of where it was is lost. So you would record and record and record, but eventually you had to man up and just get stuck in, if you like.
Now, were the pages all glued together?
No, fortunately not. The blocking of manuscripts is a problem that you will come across in certain circumstances. But with the Fadenmore Psalter, we didn't have that issue. What we had was a breakdown of the proteins of the vellum, which means it basically turned into a gelatinous mass. So there were those areas that had survived intact, and the integrity of the page had survived intact. But there was other areas, and unfortunately the majority of the areas, where it had just turned into a kind of a jelly, if you like.
And so what do you do with that?
You put it aside and come back to it, if you like. What I tried to do was at least identify the general area which this mass of material came from. I would process the more intact pieces, then come back to it and process it. But those areas in themselves turned out to be very interesting, because although the vellum had broken down and, as I say, was this gelatinous mass, there was a strange kind of a chemical reaction where the ink that had been used to write the manuscript had preserved a tiny piece of vellum underneath the ink. So we basically had letters, floating letters,
oh my goodness,
in this mass of material. So, as I say, I would go letter fishing to try and retrieve all these guys. You know, we were obliged to keep every tiny fragment from this we came across.
Yeah.
And one of the main kind of purposes was to separate bog material or extraneous material from anything, and that means anything, that was related to the manuscript itself.
Did you come across anything that was surprising? I mean, you've seen psalters with psalms written in them in calligraphy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The text itself is fairly much a standard psalter. There are a few differences in some spellings, and there's some what they call Irishisms, where we had a tendency to use a double S for spelling particular words. But the text is fairly standard. But as a physical object, the manuscript itself had a lot of surprises for us. When we were first presented with the lasagna, you could see sitting on the bottom of these massive pages the cover of the manuscript. Now, the fact that there's a cover at all was exciting, even if it was an expected kind of style, because there is so little surviving of original covers. We have our psalters, we have our early medieval manuscripts in a reasonable number. The amount we have in their original bindings is minuscule. So although this poor old book had to survive very unpleasant conditions for over a millennia buried in the bog, at least it was out of our hands, where we would rebind it and change it and bind it again and change it again. It was encapsulated, if you like, in its original form.
Are you able to straighten out the old cover so it looks like a cover again?
Yes, indeed. Well, the advantage of the cover was that it was, unlike the text block, which is made from vellum, it was made from a tanned piece of leather. Now, tanned leather, as in your leather jacket and your leather shoes, survives very well in the conditions within the bog. It was completely intact and stable. So yes, we were able to take it out, dry it out under kind of standard archaeological processes, and we now have a flexible cover intact.
We're talking to John Gillis about the Fadenmore Psalter. He's going to be speaking tonight in a presentation called Treasure from the Bog at the New Mexico History Museum at 6 o'clock. Now, I was talking last night to Tom Leach, and Tom, you were telling me that there was a piece of Egyptian papyrus found in this?
Well, that, I'm sure, was one of the big surprises that
Absolutely.
You found, John.
Yes,
and the question is, what is this piece of papyrus that only comes from Egypt doing in 8th century Ireland?
Yeah. Well, yes. If any of your listeners have the answer, I'd be glad to know, because it's a complete anomaly that you should find papyrus, which, you know, we know in the Roman world was taken from Egypt in its original source, and it would have spread. Once you had Roman occupation of that area, it would have spread across the Roman world, so you would expect to find it across Europe. But the nature of the material itself means you don't get survival of it anywhere except in areas where it would have been originally grown, where you've got a much more friendly climate. But to find it in the middle of Ireland, in a bog, was unprecedented.
What do you speculate happened? Mm. I mean, were there Egyptian exchange students? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're not far off it, actually, to be honest with you. There is documented evidence, of course, of Eastern Mediterranean monks traveling, and the very fact that monasticism in Ireland in general was such a strong force. If you've only got to have a look across to the offshore island of Britain, and you find you've got a church based on Rome. But in Ireland, the monastic church is much stronger, and of course, the origin of that actually comes from Egypt. So, as I say, as well as documented historical evidence, there's always been this strong link. And the fact that we should start to find material evidence, because not only do we have the papyrus, but the actual cover itself, the style of the cover, the way it was made, actually mimics early Coptic, which were the Christians in northern Egypt at that time, early medieval time, mimics their style of book as well. So do we have a transfer of technology on how to make this? As you say, a visiting monk tells them about this wonderful new method of housing your psalter. Or do we actually have an object coming with them to Ireland?
As you're talking, I can't help but think that the training of a conservator is incredible. I mean, you have to know about not only the cultural history, but the actual molecular level materials of things from all over the place.
Yes. It's a long process, and I always think to myself that it's dangerous to ever think yourself, I'm there, I'm arrived, now I know it, because you never stop learning with this. And almost each object that comes along to you, you know, teaches you more as well. So it's a constant kind of growing profession, if you like, and you're constantly trying to learn more from it. It's a slow process. It takes a particular sort of person. We're all a bit geeky, you know, by nature of it, but very rewarding work. Just the end product is really well worth it.
Do you ever look at old objects? Most objects of the nature of the Faden Psalter, Fadenmoor Psalter, are gone. They've gone back to nature. Yes. They've disintegrated. Yes. They have ceased to exist, as will almost everything that I'm looking at right now in the Santa Fe Baking Company. It will go back to nature and cease to exist. Those things that survive, some of them survive because they are in their time considered important. Some of them survive at random, like this thing that ended up in a bog. Are they important just because they survived?
That's a great question. It's interesting in relation to that. And it's a kind of point I've been trying to make about this. There's nothing special about the Fadenmoor Psalter at its time. It's a fairly plain book in a fairly plain cover. What we do have extant are the more elaborate books, the very highly illuminated books and the highly decorated books. They're the ones that survived because, of course, people looked after them. People took care of them. They were revered and put to one side. But there is no doubt in my mind they're actually the minority. The likes of the Fadenmoor Psalter would have been produced in much greater numbers than these more elaborate books. It's just that because of their nature, they're simply not looked after and they don't care. So the Fadenmoor Psalter, in that respect, is much more representative, if you like, of early medieval Irish bookmaking. So it's important in that sense, as an ordinary everyday object, that it survives.
And Tom, you were telling me that books like this have been actually shown in, was it in paintings?
Yeah. One of the things that John was able to show to prove that what he thought was actually the case is illustrated in old other manuscripts, illuminated illustrations. Down to the detail on the buttons on the
yes.
book cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what are you doing visiting Santa Fe? What are you doing in the U.S. right now?
I was extremely fortunate to be invited as a museum scholar to the Getty Center for 3 months to do some research, to do some more research on the Fadenmoor Psalter and to kind of keep the momentum going, if you like, because everyday stuff gets in the way, you know. But this was an opportunity to come away and just focus on it. And I thought to myself, well, you know, when in Rome, I thought it would be nice to introduce the Fadenmore Psalter to America. So I've been trying to get about as much as I can on this west side to just let people know about it. And, you know, the likes of Tom and Pat have been extremely helpful. Without this sort of contact and without this sort of interaction and other people's enthusiasm, I really appreciate third-party enthusiasm. It's okay for me to get excited about it. I've been exposed to it for the past year. But when you get people who understand that and get it, then you get the sort of support you need. And I've been very fortunate to get it here.
What will happen to the manuscript once it's fully conserved to the best of your abilities?
As it happens, we have reached the stage where it's stable enough that it's now on permanent display, or at least parts of are on permanent display. There are two bifolia, two openings on display permanently in the National Museum. It has its own dedicated space in the National Museum in Dublin in Ireland, along with the cover and related material.
So will we be seeing slides of it or pictures of it tonight?
I have some wowing slides to show anybody who wants to come along tonight. We've got, as I say, I'm really only just the kind of teller of the story. The manuscript itself is the amazing part of it. And just to see some of the images that were created simply by the process of dismantling it and putting it back together again, it gives an absolutely unique view of an early medieval book.
It's an amazing story. John Gillis is Senior Manuscript Conservator at Trinity College Dublin. Tom Leach is Director of the Press at the Palace of the Governors, and Tom has brought John to Santa Fe, where he will be speaking tonight at 6 o'clock at the New Mexico History Museum. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It was great
to be
here.
Thank you, Mary Shannon.
Thanks.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.